You know, life is an interesting place. It's a stage. I was talking to somebody the other day, and they were saying, isn't it interesting to walk down the street? And I was like, yeah, I was thinking about that the other day. The street, like Shakespeare said, all the world's a stage. The street is a stage. Like, for example, if I was in that cafe 4 hours ago, now we're walking down the street, and I'm not in that cafe. But I was there getting breakfast. And I can remember myself in there doing those actions. Anyways, it was just something that I thought about the other day. Maybe kind of absurd, maybe important. Maybe you've thought about these sorts of things. Anyways, this is Noah Becker talking to you on the White Hot Magazine Art World podcast. It's the beginning of October 2023, and we have lots of interesting episodes on the podcast already, and many interesting guests have joined me over the last number of years. But we also have more surprises coming up, so we're happy you tuned in. We're also happy that you read whitehotmagazine.com. I'll just throw in a little plug for the magazine. And lately, the magazine has been doing really well. We've been the top of Google News with our articles. For example, we did something about the Museum of Modern Art recently, and it ranked above the New York Times, above Art News, above Art Forum, above ArtNet, above all of our favorite magazines, which incidentally rank above us at different times as well. It's a friendly campus of art magazines, interacting, exchanging ideas. No, actually, some of them are corporate. I wouldn't say that White Hot Magazine is corporate, but it's definitely not alternative. But that was one of our mantras and one of our missions, to create something where you might have a review of Museum of Modern Art or the Met or Gagosian or some other major element in the art world. And then right next to that, you might have a pop-up show happening in someone's loft or in someone's garage or someone running a gallery out of their bathroom. Which sounds insane, but actually, if you were in New York in the 90s like I was, almost every bathroom in Williamsburg had a gallery. I'm being serious. I'm not just making that up. I'm planning a group show in New York in November 2023. And more information about that soon. Or maybe you'll read about it in the newspaper. Who knows? But I hope everybody's having a wonderful time in the art world, making your art, whatever kind of art you make. I'm not sure what kind of art you do make, but whatever art you're making is hopefully giving you much happiness and much relaxation. So this is Noah Becker for the White Hot Magazine Art World podcast. Here's some found audio of the brilliant, legendary painter Helen Frankenthaler with Charlie Rose, who has a bit of a checkered reputation, but nonetheless, it's the only Helen Frankenthaler interview I liked, so please enjoy here on the White Hot Magazine Art World podcast. I'm your host, Noah Becker.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Ellen Frankenthaler is a supremely talented and unique artist, and for nearly half a century, her work has played a consistently powerful role in the ever-changing contemporary art world. Her works are shown in one major museum or gallery after another throughout the United States and abroad. Her next exhibition opens on April 18th at the National Gallery in Washington. We're very pleased to have her with us this evening in Washington. Welcome.
Thank you.
It's great to have you here. I made the point early on that this is an exhibition of your prints. Here is the book that goes with it. We can sort of see this. Television never does justice to art. I mean, you know, whether it's slides or as a reproduction, it's never quite does the justice.
It's not the real McCoy.
Even beyond that. I mean, it's just somehow something, the experience loses something in the translation. I'd love to talk about you first, and growing up, and then going away to school, and going then to Bennington. When you decided to return to New York City, was it fixed in your mind then that you wanted to be a painter?
Pretty much, yes. I'd thought about it and worked at it for years, but by the time I hit New York in 1949 and 50. That's all I wanted to be, yes.
And when you saw and met Jackson Pollock and de Kooning and many others, what was their impact? What was the nature of their influence on you?
Tremendous. I mean, they were my New York
mentors. These are early 50s, right?
Yes, and I had come from high schools and college that were preparations, but that shock, that recognition of what was going on in the art world in New York in those early 50s was tremendous for me and my painting. We were then, certainly, and probably still are, the capital of what's going on. Yeah.
When did you first put canvas on the floor and stand there and say, I'm going to create something different?
Well, I was heading towards it, but I think once I literally saw Jackson, and I used to go out and visit in Springs, working on the floor and saw his methods and materials, I thought I'd like to try that too. I brought another message to
I know you
it.
Did, and that's what I'm getting to. Yeah. I'm building to that.
But the approach took painting literally off the easel, so that instead of dealing head-on with four sides and four corners, you felt the boundaries of the canvas, the scale of it, were endless. That thrust of shoulder as compared to wrist alone and zeroing in and telescoping was nothing compared to this sweep of handling the method and material in a different way. He still wanted the same result, which was a beautiful picture that worked, whether it was on the wall or any place, and in the end, paintings are seen on walls, not on floors, unless you're Tiepolo and doing a ceiling.
And you know, when you read a lot about you, as I have, a lot is always said about beautiful and beautiful. What do you say to that when people take note and say, what she does is beautiful? And some say, yes. And you say, because well, you've read all that, I'm sure, too.
Oh, yes. I'm hung on it. I think today, beautiful, which is always a tricky word, but now it's become an incendiary word because in many ways today, beauty is obsolete and not the main concern of art. And you can't prove beauty. It's there as a fact, and you know it, and you feel it, and it's real. But you can't say to somebody, this has it. I might be able to say it, and others might recognize it. But it gives no specific message other than itself, which in turn should be able to move you into some sort of truth and insight and something beyond art. I mean, initially it's pleasure that grows, but it isn't just the shock of a message which you can have and dismiss. Once you've had it, it's over.
You may have seen, I don't want to pat myself on the back here. You may have seen, because I'm probably not very good at it. You saw me do maybe David Ross, the director of the Whitney, and then I had some artists from the Whitney. Then I had, in another broadcast, these are three separate broadcasts, I had Robert Hughes on the other night.
I saw Bob the other night.
You saw it. Now tell me what you thought about that and what he said that caused you to want to say what.
Well, basically, I'd say I agree with his sentiments.
Yeah. About the Whitney.
I haven't seen the Whitney, and this is very unfair of me, I feel I have because I've seen all the other recent Whitney shows. And the Whitney, I was saying to a friend today, has one of the greatest permanent collections of painting in America. But I think the line they've taken recently has very little to do with art as I feel art.
Why?
Because I think it has to do more with gesture, with
political
politics,
statement.
With I know that when I was on the council at NEA, I mean, the considerations are not beauty. Criticism is considered gobbledygook and dead and irrelevant. Good literary or other criticism, and the medium is definitely the message. Losses, Vietnam, racism, multiculturalism,
rather than
AIDS
art for art's sake.
Rather than this picture knocks me out, whether it's a Piero della Francesca or a Monet or a Pollock or David Smith, and it's beautiful, and its beauty will grow. I mean, otherwise, it wouldn't have sat, that Fra Angelico wouldn't have been at the Fog for how many years, and looking better than something else.
Has mountains and sea grown for you?
That's a hard question. It broke through into where I really live. So I still learn from it, and it's still my origins, and I cherish it, but I like to think I've taken off from there, but still really house those seeds. You know,
so much to talk about. Let me just make a point about the prints. Why an exhibition of your prints? In 1989, I think you had an exhibition of your paintings at the Metropolitan Museum of Modern Art, right?
Right.
And that was the last great exhibition I know about,
yes.
And probably been
and
some
that was
since.
Originated in Fort Worth.
That was at the museum? The Kimball or the other one?
The Fort Worth Museum of Modern Art. But then it opened at MoMA.
Opened at MoMA.
Right.
Why an exhibition now of prints?
It just worked out that way. It wasn't any plan. I had had a show at the Guggenheim of Works on Paper.
Right.
And had recently had the show you just mentioned, MoMA, a retrospective of sorts. And I hadn't had a comprehensive print show in 13 or 14 years. And Ruth Fine, who curated this show, had a real vision. I mean, she was as creative as a curator as an artist is supposed to be, and I think she's done a magnificent job of picking what is really, in essence, Frankenthalerism in prints.
Frankenthalerism in prints. All right. Let me take a look at this one.
Right.
First still we show here, and I'll have you describe it. This is a postcard for James Schuyler. There it is. You can see it down there. See?
Yeah.
This was...
Could have made it myself.
Yeah. All right, I just want to give, as limited as television reproductions are, let just give a sense of these slides before we go. This is April 18th, the exhibition begins. Next slide, Savage Breeze. Anything you want to say, jump right in. Next slide, Tautoku.
Tautoku,
I'm sorry.
Meaning all at once.
All at once.
French.
When was this done?
That was done in the 80s.
Yeah.
It's on a copper plate.
I should also mention that you have designed sets for the Royal Ballet,
mm-hmm.
and you also have done sculpture and
tapestries.
And tapestries.
Ceramics.
Yes.
The works.
Yeah,
and I cook. Yes.
And next one is, this is Gateway?
Yes, that's a huge screen.
You always work. Your canvases are what, 4 feet by eight? Or I mean, how big are the canvases that most
they're
of the canvases?
They're not as, they are big, but when
heroic
I
heroic scale, someone said.
Well, no, I mean, the number of canvases I've made that are over 12 feet in one direction or the other are not many. I mean, they're all, I don't know, I'd say 7-9 would be the average, which is not tremendous. Look at the Renaissance.
Yeah. Tell me, this is a silly question, but I'm interested. What does color say to you?
Color is another tricky word, like beauty, because color, when it works, implies light. And dark things can be light. And light things can look dead. You can have on a wonderful primary color tie, and I can feel this goes dead.
Yeah.
And you can have on a marvelous black-brown navy tie, and I feel that lives. That's terrific.
Where does the instinct for color come from? Is it study? Is it experience?
Could answer that, you could make a fortune. And I'm glad you can't. You just don't know where it comes from. You got it or you don't.
Yeah. Of all the people that have influenced you from early on, Clement Greenberg.
Yes.
All the artists I've named.
Yes.
Of people that have had a direct impact, not old masters that might have influenced you. The world of abstract expressionism. Who's had the most influence? Who do you have to say, not the most, but in the top three or four?
I think it's a combination. One thinks of all the fortunate and unfortunate syndromes of one's life that have to do with your genes, your parents, your education, having the luck to be at the right place at the right time, having a certain metabolism, appetite.
Yeah. See, all of this doesn't just apply to artists. It applies to anything.
Right.
It applies to whatever you do.
Right. And
they're really the shaping forces rather than the shaping individuals that impact on a person's life.
And your gift. And you take it from
what
there.
What was your gift?
Well, I think hopefully to make some good pictures.
Well, of course it was that.
Yes.
You know. I thank you. This exhibition at the National Gallery of Art. Here again is the book that accompanies it. It's a pleasure to have you on this broadcast.
Thank you.
I hope that we could do this again in a different capacity.
Thank you
very much. Stay with me. Thank you for joining us this evening, From Politics to Art and the Combination Thereof. It's been a pleasure to be here, and we look forward to seeing you tomorrow night. See you then.